Making Her Way introduces you to the brilliant, ambitious women behind some of your favourite products and asks them to share their motivations and the practical strategies they've used to achieve their goals. In each episode, we discuss the exact process of bringing a new product to market and to success. Join me as we discuss design, manufacturing, sustainability, and modern marketing. My name is Sarah Lidwell Darnan, and my goal is to bridge the gap between up-and-coming product creators and the women who are out there already changing the world. Catherine Swift is the founder of OMG Teas, an organic matcha tea business in England. She started the business after her mother was diagnosed with cancer, and she wanted to explore every possible way of helping her mother's recovery, including nutrition and the impact of antioxidants. Some years later, she now has a successful business selling both premium grade matcha powder and ready-to-mix grab-and-go bottles with stockists all over the UK, as well as a vibrant e-commerce business. In this wide-ranging interview, we get down to the details of matcha tea grades, packaging, of course, my favourite topic, and how to market a product that many people have never even heard of before. Hello, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. So can you tell us what it is that you make and introduce yourself, please?
So my business is OMG Tea. We're a specialist organic matcha green tea company. Matcha is a very special type of green tea that's produced in Japan. Matcha means powdered leaf in Japanese. So the big difference between matcha and normal green tea is that rather than having the infusion from tea leaves or a tea bag, you consume the powder, which is the entire leaf. So on average, matcha is believed to have about 12 times the nutrients of a regular cup of green tea. So it was introduced into Japanese culture about 800 years ago by the Zen Buddhist monks when they discovered it helped them to meditate for longer. And that was because of a unique combination of caffeine and L-theanine. So the caffeine was energizing their bodies, and the L-theanine, which is an amino acid that induces alpha brain waves, was stilling and focusing their minds. So they were finding that they were able to meditate for longer, but their focus and, you know, their mindset was stronger, more effective. So that's how it started. And it's been like a bit of a hidden gem in Japan for hundreds of years. It was used by the samurais before they went out to battle for energy and focus. It's like an art form in Japan. You can go to university and study the tea ceremony, which is about how you prepare matcha at university in Japan. And we've kind of just like identified it as a Western product only in the past sort of 10, 15 years. And it's still really quite embryonic over here as well. So I first became aware of it back in 2010 when my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer. She had stage 3, quite an aggressive breast cancer. And I was floored by my mum's, well, I've got, you know, one of five. She's just literally the heartbeat of the family. She's, you know, she was the last person that we, you know, imagined was ever going to get, you know, ill, I suppose. And, you know, she got breast cancer. It was a really big shock. And I decided that I wanted to do something to help in some way. So I felt like I wasn't out of control of the situation. And through the contacts that I had in business at the time, I worked in event management. I used to run a big awards ceremony called the Northwest Football Awards. And on the day that my mum was in hospital having her mastectomy, I was literally all over the place. And my husband said to me, you're not doing yourself or your mum any good. You need to focus on some work. So I ended up picking up the phone to the chair of the judging panel at the time. And we talked about what was going to happen. during the judging day, which was coming up. But he was also the chairman of a £20 million appeal for the new children's hospital in Manchester. And we'd always historically raised money for the appeal because we got the great and good from the football world in the room. So we got onto the subject of the charity and asked if he wanted to continue to raise money for the children's hospital. And he said, actually, I've just been asked to head up a £5 million appeal for Breakthrough Breast Cancer. So this year I'd like to. So it was weird. I mean, literally the hairs on the back of my neck stood on end. The fact that I'd chosen to phone him, of all people, that my mum was actually in hospital that day having the operation. So I told him about what was happening with mum. We raised money for Breakthrough that year. Breakthrough Breast Cancer is now Breast Cancer Now. It's the biggest breast cancer charity in the UK. But they needed project manager for the Northwest appeal. So I applied for the job and was appointed as the project manager. So I ran the £5 million appeal for Breakthrough Breast Cancer. And the appeal was about research. So it wasn't, you know, about breast cancer care or, you know, breast cancer support. It was specifically about identifying, you know, new research that might help fight and cure breast cancer. It was also what's classed as a major donor appeal. So rather than tin shaking outside supermarkets, we were identifying high net worth individuals and taking them around the research unit to meet the scientists and see the science in action. And it just so happened that Professor Michael Lasanti, who was the research director at the time, had a real keen interest, amongst other things, in antioxidants. So it was there that I found out about EGCG, which is an antioxidant that's found in abundance in green tea. So I wanted mum to drink the green tea with the most EGCG in it. And because of how matcha is cultivated and processed, they reckon it's probably got about 130 times the EGCG of regular green tea. So straight away, I thought, right, we need to be drinking this tea. So that's how it started. My interest was piqued in matcha through the research. So we just started drinking it. I'd done my own research to identify, you know, where to buy it from and, you know, a good quality product. And yeah, we just started drinking it and felt great. Not only did I feel that, you know, we were taking a little bit of control back and potentially helping mum fight the disease and helping her in her recovery. It actually, because of this unique combination of caffeine and L-theanine, it was giving us a physical boost as well. So at that stage, back in 2010, it wasn't very well known. And I just felt compelled to try and spread the word about it. So that's how OMGT was born. That's how it came about.
Wow, that is such an amazing story. And I love how it's so research-based as well. And it comes from like proper solid academic, well, and medical research. So what made you make the shift from just drinking it to thinking, okay, actually, I need to start importing this and turning this into a business?
Because I think I was really, the research had inspired me so much. I mean, they weren't just interested in antioxidants in the research. They were also interested in the repurposing of FDA and MHRA approved drugs. So, you know, there was other and drug discovery, but there was an interest in antioxidants. And that was what was really exciting for me, because I couldn't control what was going on with the, you know, the drug development and the repurposing of drugs, but I could go down the road or research online and buy antioxidants that were potentially going to help. So I think that was it. I knew that I needed to, you know, I needed to do something to spread the word, because I had so much belief in its potential curative effect that it just happened totally organically, and it just felt like the natural thing to do. It happened seamlessly, really.
So what was the first thing that you did when you decided to turn this into a business?
I started researching matcha producers in Japan, identifying the ones that, you know, were award-winning, that had been established, you know, a long time and had a reputation for producing quality matcha, and then just started contacting them and talking to them about, you know, supply, sampling lots of tea, trying lots of different types of matcha. And that's, you know, that's how I eventually chose my matcha sauce.
And were there any restrictions on importing it into the UK that you came across?
No, but obviously you need to look into that because, you know, my matcha happens to come via, you know, Europe, which is great because obviously there's free trade in Europe. But I mean, if I could, if I wanted, go direct to Japan and import it from Japan. Okay. But then you've obviously got to take into consideration the various import charges and taxes and things that you will have. And then the other thing that obviously for me that was important was whatever I had, I wanted to be organic. So, you know, it didn't matter if the product was certified organic in Japan, you still have to get organic certification in the UK. So we had to go through that process as well of getting the tea, you know, accredited basically by an organic license body in the UK.
Yes. And I've learned recently that every step of the way has to be certified by the Soil Association, like where it's packaged, everything has to meet its requirements, doesn't it? It's not. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I actually, we don't use the Soil Association. We use organic farmers and growers who were actually around before Soil Association. Association are a bigger, they're a bigger outfit than organic farmers and growers. But organic farmers and growers are another one of the big, you know, one of the big organic license companies in this country.
Okay, so the first step of bringing your product to market, so you started off with the matcha powder, is that right? That was your first product?
Yeah.
And how did you, like, what did you do when you got your first delivery? Like, how did you present it? How did you sell it?
It was just one grade of matcha at the time that I started off with. And I got 100 tins of it and that was it. And it arrived. And I remember the day that it arrived, it was just, you know, I was over the moon because it just felt so good to have it in my hands. But yeah, it was my husband, actually. We had to come up with a brand name. So we sat over the table. It was actually my husband that came up with the name OMGT, which actually is organic matcha green tea. I mean, obviously, lots of people think it's, oh, my goodness, oh, my
yes.
God, tea. But yeah, it's actually organic matcha green tea.
Oh,
so
amazing.
It fits really well. And the branding at first, I created it with my vast, you know, knowledge of branding, I created the brand and I really liked it. I actually really liked it, but it has evolved significantly since then. We did some sort of market research, but brand research as well. I worked with a branding agency, and it was really about identifying our market and, you know, our messaging as a brand. It wasn't to talk about the brand visual, what the logo looked like. And the guys that were doing it just said, oh, please, please let us, can we please look at your logo as well? And I was really offended. It's like, what on earth is wrong with my logo? I think, I actually loved it. But I'm so glad that I let them. Because it is
brilliant.
Much better. It's so much better now. So, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
And then, you know, really, it was a case of we set the website up and the website's evolved loads as well. The initial website that we had was WordPress. We now use Shopify, but there's been numerous iterations of the website. We set the website up, but obviously, you know, you can have a whiz-bang website, but if nobody knows where it is, and you know, it's about getting a customer base. So the first thing I did with regards to getting traction for the product was local farmers markets and like the Brighton and Hove Food Festival and things like that. So I'd literally take a table or a stand and sell my products locally to people in the area. And that's how it started. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah. It's something that I do recommend to people to start looking at these local farmers markets. And it's so validating to have you say, yes, this is how I did it. And did the... I'm going to jump forward and then jump back again for a second.
Okay.
Did that product in the tins, was that what you started bringing to retailers? Or did you develop the iced matcha product before you started working with retailers? No, the tins.
We started off with the original grade, and then actually through this whole branding exercise that we did, we changed the grading system. So we created this grading system for matcha, and that, you know, I had three different grades at the time. I've now got four, and rather than having, you know, culinary grade, premium grade, super premium, ceremonial, which is what everybody talks about on matcha, it was kind of like I was really frustrated with it because there was a lot of people putting ceremonial grade product on their products, and they weren't even, it wasn't even Japanese matcha. You know, it could have, it was like maybe an inferior matcha powdered tea, because matcha actually, like I said, means powdered leaf in Japanese. So anything that's coming from outside of Japan isn't matcha. It's powdered tea. It's produced differently. It's not produced in the ecological environment that matcha is supposed to be produced in. But there were people, you know, bringing matcha in from China and other countries and putting ceremonial grade on it. And it drove me insane because actually until you open the tin, you don't know what you're going to get. No. And because matcha is expensive, people, you know, are tempted to go for a cheaper product. You know, and it's got ceremonial grit. And anyway, so I found the whole thing frustrating. I thought, what's the point in having that grading on our products when it actually doesn't mean anything? So that's when we created the A grading system. And the A grading system is a similar grit. It's the way that they use that to grade high quality wood that they craft guitars from. So it's just, you know, you're starting at a high level at A. And then, so we've got A, we've got double A, we've got triple A, and we've got triple A plus. So that's our grading system. And now what we've noticed is other people are jumping on the bandwagon and starting to grade their matcha in a similar way, which is good. Right. It also irritates me, but, you know, it's... So coming back to your question, I had what is now our double A originally, that was the product that I launched with. But by the time we started to get into retail, and again, that was local. So Infinity Foods, which is probably the biggest independent health food store in Brighton, and Hisby, probably the second biggest. They were the two that I went for and got the product into. And I had three grades at that stage. Two or three grades, I can't remember. But anyway, so that's what that's. That's where we went. And then the next step was looking at multiple, chains of stores, but within that same sort of organic whole food category. Yeah. So Planet Organic, Daylesford Organic, Victoria Health, places like that, that, you know, was the next obvious step for us. Yeah.
We live next to Planet Organic in Islington, and oh my god, you can't go into that shop without spending so much money. Everything's just wonderful in there.
I know exactly where that Planet Organic is because I've been in there many a time doing tastings.
Oh, it's dangerous, that store.
So and then the ice matcha came at a later date because I knew I wanted to develop a product that was what I would have classed as our matcha for the masses, that gave people an opportunity to try matcha on the go without spending £15-20 a tin. But what I also knew was that, you know, pre-mixed matcha will oxidize and lose its nutritional clout. Oh. So if you were to buy in a Tetra Pak, there are a few brands out there that do matcha drinks, and open it up and pour it out, it wouldn't be green, it would be brown. And that's because the drink is oxidized. So it's lost a lot of its benefit. So I wanted to produce something that was going to enable the end consumer to get the full nutritional hit. And that's where the ice matcha came from and the dosing cap. So so the matcha is actually, it sits in the cap, and then when you're ready to drink it, you activate it. It drops into the bottle, shake it up and drink it. Yeah.
That's so clever. And how did you get that made? Did you come up with that? Did you have to explain it to a manufacturer, or did that concept already exist?
The concept already existed.
Okay.
We did look into producing, and we have a prototype of our own cap, but the cost for a small business to develop the tooling is tens of thousands of pounds. And then your minimum run is hundreds of thousands of caps, you know.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's a, you've got to either have serious investment or know that your product is going to work. So we took an off the shelf product, and that's the format that it's currently in. But that is, you know, it's likely to evolve for us, you know, because that was an opportunity for us to just, you know, to get the product out there. The volumes are still huge. You still have to buy, like, our bottle is screen printed. You know, you've got a minimum order on your bottles, you've got a minimum order of, you know, tens of thousands again on the caps. But what we didn't have was the cost of the tooling, and the tooling is ridiculously expensive. So that was a product that we launched, I think, at the beginning of maybe end of 2008. Was it end of 2018 or mid-2000? Yeah, so it's been on the market, you know, year
so
and a
tens
half
tens of thousands of those caps.
Yeah
so that's a huge, even for getting it off the shelf, so to speak, that's still a massive commitment.
Yeah, because it will also, you know, if you're working with a contract manufacturer who's going to assemble the product for you, they will, you know, your price is going to come down the more your volume increases as well.
Yeah.
And because that product, you know, that it's the cap's expensive, the bottles, the screen printing on the bottle's expensive, the ingredients that go into the cap are expensive. You know, you've got to try and, you've got to try and work out, you know, the best volume to keep the price at an affordable level for you, but then obviously for the end consumer.
Yes. So with this then, that went to retailers, that was your main target, and restaurants as well, I think. Is that right?
No, it has gone into retail. So at the moment it's in Holland and Barrett and Ocado.
Right.
So that's where we currently sell it. We sell it on our website. Daylesford Organic also take it. But that has been, you know, I know one of the things I know that we're going to talk about is challenges, the new product development and developing a product like that in a very, very competitive environment, because RTD, ready to drink products, are extremely competitive, has been unbelievably difficult. It's been so hard.
Right. So
yeah.
What have you come up against?
There's been all sorts of you know, teething issues. I mean, the company that we've dealt with for the cap, they're actually also a startup. You know, the issues in contract manufacturing, you know, issues with actually getting the cap onto the bottle. It's just every step of the way has been, you know, it's been challenging. And that's what happens with new product development. You think that it's going to be, you know, you've got your critical time path and you've got your plan, and it never, ever goes to plan, you know. So that's a real watch out. Don't expect it to launch on time, to launch how you want it to launch, and for there to be no, you know, issues along the road, because there will be.
And do you have everything made in the UK?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so at least there's that. Do you feel that gives you more control?
A little bit, yeah, yeah.
And do you go physically to the factory, to the manufacturer, and sort of like watch it being made? Or like, how did you start the conversation with your manufacturer?
Well, interestingly, the company that we use to contract manufacture are the company that already produce our matcha capsules. So we have the powdered tea in capsule form, so that people who, you know, for convenience, just want to take it as a capsule, they can. So that's their business. They manufacture health food supplements, but they also have a bottling line.
Oh, amazing. So that kind of reduces the risk if you're dealing with one person that can do it all. So what's your best-selling product? But again,
you see, the best-selling product is our AAA grade matcha.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I spoke over you for a second there. You were about to say something else.
The other thing, obviously, you know, if you're, you know, one of the issues that we've come up against, and luckily, again, our contract manufacturer was going, they were going through the organic procedure themselves and getting the license. You can't produce an organic product on a non-organic facility. So that also really limits the amount of contract manufacturers around that would be able to produce your product significantly.
Right. I have recently come across this myself. Yes. And it's so difficult to find a manufacturer in the first place as well, because Googling them doesn't always produce what you'd expect. They tend to go by word of mouth a lot, I think. And did you go to trade shows to find people like this?
I already had the contact. I did the research. I actually did do the research online and found the company that we work with online. But I think definitely going to packaging shows. If I was to do it again, that's what I would be doing, because not only are you going to meet them, you're going to see the new innovations as well.
Right. Yes. I was interviewing the founder of Kin Living, you know, the household products. Yeah. And I asked her what her advice would be to somebody starting a business. And she was like, packaging trade shows. That should be your first place that you go. Because you can't even imagine the things that are being created out there.
Exactly.
And you get so much inspiration from them. So when did you start to feel that this was actually a good idea and that it might take off for you?
Do you know what? I never thought it wasn't a good idea. You know, I think probably because of where it came from, and because I was just so unbelievably passionate about it. I don't think the thought has ever come across my mind that I couldn't make it work somehow, which is probably totally naive, because I had no idea, you know, how to set up a business at the time. But I've just done it step by step, you know, taking bite-sized chunks, and that's how it's evolved. And I don't know why, but I don't think I ever thought I wouldn't make it happen. I was determined to make it happen.
Amazing. And have you found that your online sales are the biggest source of revenue for you, or working with retailers?
It's kind of flipped on its head recently with what's going on in the world. So it was retail, wholesale, but now it's online. And that's because the likes of Lakeland that we were stuck with shut down during coronavirus.
Yeah.
Obviously Planet Organic, not all their stores were open, but also the footfall was reduced. Dalesford Organic the same. So the business has flipped on its head with regards to, you know, the percentage of sales now coming through online is higher than retail, which is great, actually. You know, I know what you were saying about getting into retail. I think it's great because, you know, the visibility for your brand is so much better if you're going to get into a chain of stores. However, your margins are tighter, much tighter, and you need to run promotions all the time, which makes them even tighter. Our margin selling direct to consumers via our website and via the likes of Amazon is so much better.
Amazing.
I think that's how the business has evolved in that way. And that's probably the right way for it to have happened, because now people know the brand. They will come to the website because they know where to find us. They will look for us on Amazon. I always thought I want to get into Waitrose. We're perfect for Marks and Spencers. You know, it would be absolutely our products would be fantastic in those stores. And actually in the last 12 months, I've changed my mind on that. I think You know, those getting a listing in stores like that, in Boots as well, you know, it can send your business under. If you're not ready for it, it can send your business under because the margins are really, really tight. Everything to do with the, you know, the supplier agreements that you have to sign is heavily stacked in their favour.
Right.
And there's a lot of, like, for Boots, for a fact, I know, and Waitrose, there's a lot of, you know, marketing and support you need to commit to make it happen. So, I mean, I know a company very similar to mine that got listed in Marks and Spencers and as a result went under.
That's extraordinary. I did not know that. Wow. So I can see how when the margins are so tight, getting a big order and the stress that puts you under of fulfilling a big order might not make it worth it for that relatively small amount of money that you make. I can see how that would be, but I didn't realize how the promotions that they ask you to do as well could be just too much for you financially. I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think, and it very much depends on your product. It depends on your margin. For us, you know, we are an organic whole foods product. So that's the industry sector that we need to be with. We work with a great wholesaler that is getting us, you know, into all of that, you know, those sort of chains of you know, bigger chains of whole food and organic stores, but also big independent, you know, organic and whole food retailers. And I think that for now, you know, that is exactly the right place for us to be. Maybe in the future, when the awareness around matcha grows, because I still think it is growing. I still think there's a lot of people out there don't know what matcha is at all. They don't even realize it's green tea. But as that awareness around what matcha is grows and its potential, you know, its potential benefit on your health, then, you know, maybe then we'd look at bigger listings.
So education then is a big part of your marketing strategy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how have you approached that on your website?
You've got to be really careful with that. I mean, obviously we can talk about matcha, where matcha comes from, how to identify quality matcha, and there's lots of different ways. And, you know, we talk about on the website. For me, obviously, I came to it from a health perspective. That was the only reason that I found out about matcha. We can't talk about that. We can't talk about research that we're involved in. We need to be really careful how we talk about the story behind the brand on our website because of the Cancer Act that was, I don't know, I think it was the 1970s, it was first set up. There's very, very strict restrictions on what you can and can't say. And you basically can't say anything. If you're selling a product, you can't link it in any way because it's potentially giving people false hope.
Yeah,
and we would never want to do that anyway. We're a really ethical brand. But yeah, you're really restricted in what you can and can't say. So in relation to cancer, absolute no-no, can't go near it. But even other health benefits as well, you've just got to be really careful. If somebody else is saying it, that's fine. As a brand, you can't tout the health benefits of a product until the European Food Safety Authority have actually, you know, have it on their database list as, you know, as a benefit to a certain, you know, ailment. And there's very few natural products have got that. If you look on that database, there's very few have got any approved health benefits. Green tea has none. I mean, you wouldn't believe it. Green tea has no approved health benefits.
Wow.
Although we know, you know, from hundreds and hundreds of years of experience and drinking it, that, you know, it's got a potential benefit. Your doctor wouldn't tell you not to drink green tea unless you've got a certain condition that meant it wasn't, you know, there was something in it that wasn't suitable. But, you know, it's known to be good for you, but you can't talk about it. You've got to be really careful. So we are involved in research, though. You know, we've done breast cancer research at Salford University. So Professor Michael Asante was the research director at Breakthrough Breast Cancer when I was there. He's like a bit of a scientific advisor to the business. And he They've tested our tea with breast cancer stem cells, and the research is out there. So it's been published. We've also done a piece of research at Chichester University. It was a clinical trial in women in relation to fat oxidation that showed that the women who drank the tea increased their fat oxidation by 19%. They've just submitted another paper, which is about to get published, with even more exciting findings with our tea. But we can't have this stuff on our website. Right. You know, people can go and find that information, but we're doing what we can to try and, you know, validate.
Yeah.
To try and validate the health benefits without really talking about them. And hopefully one day we'll get to the stage where, you know, the EFSA have it on their, you know, database as a approved health benefit. But yeah, I suppose the other thing that's worth mentioning is, yeah, OMGT is obviously really, really important to me. But I also founded a charity called the Healthy Life Foundation that funds research into age-related diseases. Morris Watkins, who was the guy that I phoned on the day that my mum was in hospital, who was the chair of the £5 million appeal for breakthrough breast cancer, is a trustee and sits on, you know, so there's three trustees, myself, Debbie Dowie, who's the founder of a breast cancer charity called Boot Out Breast Cancer, and Morris are the trustees of the charity. We've raised over £500,000 so far. We're funding research. For me, I want OMGT to become successful enough that I can take a genuine backseat from it, keep involved, you know, but spend my time dedicated to raising money for groundbreaking research into aging, which is what the Healthy Life Foundation is all about.
That's incredible. I'm so excited to hear that you're tying it to an activist platform as well, because you're making it bring even more good to the world. And that's really, really wonderful to hear. So is there anything that you would approach differently if you were starting this all over again?
I thought about this question, and I think, you know, the new product development thing has been really challenging. I think you've got to know that you've got a viable product before embarking on it, because it chews up the majority of your time developing new products. So maybe, you know, we've got the ice matcher and we've done it, but it was hellishly hard to get there. Maybe I would have left it a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Maybe I would have left it and be launching it around about now than when we did, because it took a lot of my energy and it was financially draining on the business as well. But no, I mean, apart from that, I've grown the business relatively slowly and quite organically. And I think that was the right way for me to do it. I could have tried to scale it quicker, but then who knows what would have happened? It might have failed.
Yeah. So what would be your advice to somebody who wants to get started in your industry?
Actually, you know, going back to that question, the one thing that I would say is we've spent quite a lot of money over the years outsourcing things that would have been better done in-house.
Oh, okay.
So PR, really. You can spend a lot of money on PR. And as a small business, it's not very affordable. And it's a kind of like bit of a dark art, really, I think. Same with PPC. I think if you can learn, or there's somebody within your organization can learn PPC so that you can control it. Nobody knows your brand and your product like you do. And, you know, even the people with the best of intentions who want to do the best for your business, they're not going to do as good a job as you are. So if you can keep it in-house, keep it in-house.
Yeah. And just PPC is pay-per-click advertising.
Yes, so
Google advertising or Facebook advertising.
Or even, you know, that you've got PPC on Amazon, which is really powerful as well.
Is it? Okay, that's really interesting. Yeah, because you see sponsored products on Amazon, and I've often wondered, is that worth it? But yeah. Okay, that's really interesting. So bring as much in-house as you possibly can then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's really good to know, because these agencies are expensive, and if you can, you can learn
and
to
at the
yourself.
Right time, at the right time, they'll be great. But you know, for a small business, their fees are high. You know, it's often you know, it's not easily quantifiable as well, not for a while at least. So you might be 6 months in, having spent thousands and not being much further forward.
Yeah, it is difficult with PR in particular, especially with print and magazines, because you're getting all this positive response from them, but it could be like 3 or 4 months before
exactly.
you see that
something
turn into
drops.
More sales, and you've spent thousands of pounds on their monthly retainer in the meantime, and you don't know if it was worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that would be your advice then, to do as much of it as you can yourself and learn how to do it.
That's
really solid advice. Well, thank you very, very much for all that. It was such a fantastic story and such really solid advice and such solid experience. So it's been a huge pleasure listening to you.
Oh, thanks, Sarah. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe and leave a review.